What's on the podcast this week, Stu?
We are checking. Hello and welcome to another edition of Back of the Grid. I'm your host, Stu, and I'm joined, as always, by Tom.
Hello.
And by Chris.
Hello.
I feel like that joke at the start like doesn't really come across unless you put on a really strong Italian accent. And I couldn't.
I don't blame you.
We are referring to the fact that our first bit of news today is that Charles Leclerc has a new race engineer from Imola. Is that right?
As of this weekend, yeah. Everyone's favourite race engineer, Xavi Marcos Padros, is apparently his full name, which I now realise I've never heard before. I've only ever heard of him as Xavi. Yeah, that Ferrari out of the blue announced that he's moving to another unspecified role within Ferrari. They didn't even have like what his new job is going to be lined up to announce, which was a little strange. But yeah,
they're checking.
Yeah, they are still checking. But yeah, he's been the Leclerc's race engineer his entire time at Ferrari. He's been replaced by Leclerc's current performance engineer, a guy called Brian Bozzi, from this weekend onwards. Yeah, a little strange and out of the blue. I mean, the way he goes about being a race engineer has been a bit of a joke for years now, but I don't
running
feel like,
joke.
Yeah, I don't feel like anything's really changed recently that might have triggered this, and like him and Leclerc always seem to get on very well, so it's a little strange. But
yeah, I wonder. I wonder what it could be. This not a very entertaining episode for us to just sit here and speculate what this race engineer is doing. Like, but maybe he's got like, maybe he's having a kid or something like that. Having family,
it could be
something to do with his family,
or it could just be like another planned step in Fred Vasseur just kind of gradually making changes that he wants to see.
I genuinely thought you were going to like make some sort of plan D kind of joke.
yeah,
plan
we
D.
Think plan D.
You think plan F?
Plan X for Xavi. yeah, I mean, it like the jokes are the jokes, but like, if I had to choose someone to be my race engineer, he would be particularly high on my list. Like,
but it's not his
fault. Some
of the
communication is...
Yeah, the communication can be a bit iffy, but I think a lot of that is down to the strategists communicating with the race engineers. I don't think it's necessarily the race engineer's fault.
True.
I mean, we'll soon find out, won't we?
Suppose we will, actually. Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is just like kind of... A lot of the time, the race engineer, yes, you know... You do obviously they have a huge responsibility to help the drivers with the cars and all kinds of strategic calls and stuff like that, instant strategy calls and things. But when it comes to like actual, you know, longer term race strategy or like strategy planning, you know, planning your race compared to what everyone else has done, then that's the strategist's job, and your engineer is just sort of there for your much more immediate problems with your car and with your situation. So I don't think we can blame Xavi for a lot of the "we are checking" things. I think the "we are checking" meme sort of comes from the strategist being so damn slow to get ideas together in a live race situation. I think that's been an Achilles heel for Team Ferrari for a long time. So
yeah,
and it's only this last couple of seasons that they've really started to actually, you know, get on top of this kind of stuff, especially this season. I think they've done a much better job this season, even though we have already had a few "we are checkings" and we're only five races in. But still, it's I don't want to be too harsh on Xavi Marcos Padros.
I will miss him as well. Like, he's such a unique voice, like, that you hear week in, week out, that I think I will definitely miss hearing him around. We'll see what the new guy's like. I saw after this was announced, I think it was on Reddit, people like, what was your favourite Xavi moment from over the years? And there was one I'd completely forgotten about. It was from a year or two ago in qualifying. And he comes over the radio at the end of Q3 and says, "Lap time deleted, for Verstappen. And Leclerc is like, you've got to tell me the name first. I had a heart attack for a second then.
Yeah, I remember that. Was that in like Austria or somewhere, did you say?
Yeah, it might have been. It's a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
That's actually brutal. It's like he's pulling his leg almost.
Yeah, it was really
the it was the pause, though, more than anything, in that specific one. Like, even if he'd have said lap time deleted for Verstappen, like, that it wouldn't have been as bad.
That would have been fine,
It was the big way pause it was sort of like, lap time deleted for Verstappen.
So good.
Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Discord chat have suggested maybe he's been moved to make space for, like, someone else coming in, which kind of leads a little bit into our next bit of news. But I don't feel like they'd make a change. You know, let's say they do expect they're going to get Bono from Mercedes when Hamilton joins. Would they really make a change mid-season, bring someone else in? And well, I suppose they could if they do want Xavi to stay around and bed into whatever his new role's going to be ahead of time.
Yeah, I think it would make sense if you need someone to be in. You know, if they're thinking of a championship push next season, for example, and you want to start yourself, put your best foot forward next season. I think this season is a foregone conclusion, if we're completely honest. Let's see how this weekend goes for Ferrari. Yeah. But I think if they're not winning this race this weekend, then I do not see the championship going any other way. I will go as far to say that if Max Verstappen wins the race this coming race in Imola, he will win the world championship.
Here we go. Sound the alarm, everyone. It's happened. Yeah.
It does make sense to, if you're thinking of next year, then to get all the mistakes out of the way. If he's moving into a role where there's potential for mistakes, and whoever you're moving around, you want them all set up, ready to go for your big championship push next year when you think it's going to happen. So I think it does make sense, but it's so cryptic, isn't it? We don't know what they're doing, where he's going. So
yeah, it depends on what he's doing for the most part, doesn't it, really?
More Ferrari hires?
Yeah, we do have some news on the people that are joining Ferrari from Mercedes alongside Lewis Hamilton. First one is a guy called Loic Serra. He was their chief vehicle dynamicist, and then he became performance director in 2018. He's going to be going to Ferrari as their new head of chassis performance engineering. So pretty senior member of Mercedes jumping ship there.
Yeah.
And then also Jerome D'Ambrosio, who you'll remember as a former F1 driver and a Formula E driver for a number of years. He was Susie Wolf's deputy team principal at Venturi Formula E for a couple of years. Then he became full team principal when she left. And then more recently, he's been the driver development director at Mercedes. He's now going to Ferrari as well. He's going to be deputy team principal and head of their driver academy as well. So another pretty big name move.
Interesting. So that's kind of a, you can see a career path forming there, can't you, for Jerome
D'Ambrosio?
That's the deputy team principal, feels like very much the path towards full team principal, doesn't it?
Yeah, like the sort of talk from his time in Formula E is that he stepped into kind of that part of racing very naturally and was very good at it. So he's definitely a good guy to have in your team. And interestingly, they are both joining at the beginning of October as well. They're not even waiting for next year. So they will, I assume, both be on gardening leave for the next few months before October 1st rolls around.
Yeah.
Cool. Couple of other little bits, pretty quiet week. We had a chat a couple of weeks ago about the potential new point system, points down to sort of 12th, 15th, we discussed.
Yeah.
The F1 commission had their meeting on that and they deferred a decision on it. But it seems like the idea for this does have support from most, if not all, team principals who are part of that meeting.
What difference does it make is what I want to know. It makes absolutely no difference, this.
So there were quotes from a few team principals, and the general gist was there's the midfield is... It's not like there's a fastest teams in midfield and the slowest teams anymore. Like, there's the front runners and there's everybody else. Yeah. So it makes sense to give out more points to reward kind of merit and over the course of a season and sort of have a better judge of who's been better over the course of a season. The other part of it was the idea that it will keep cars in races more You know, if someone's running 17th and they've got a bit of, you know, they're worried about something, I'll just retire the car.
It's just fallacy, though. This is all, yeah, this is all fallacy. Like, there's already an established way of,
yeah, there is,
setting the order of who finishes where in the World Championship based on other aggregate scoring methods. So you don't need everyone to have points.
No, I think
it takes the value away from, I think.
There's a little bit in that last point that Chris was saying that they were making, though, I think, which is like, I mean, how many times do you see someone who would normally be a top 10 finisher, I don't know, have something not quite right and be 15th, 16th, and then ultimately like retire the car because they want to,
they just want to
like save it and they're outside the points. I think if you did have points going all the way down, they're more likely to potentially stay in that race and fight for whatever the next place is where they can, because there's some value in it. So I think there's a little bit of an argument to say that it'd maybe keep more cars finishing races in that scenario, but I think that's probably the biggest driver of the biggest incentive.
I don't mind the idea of, well, as like getting to the back end of the season, let's say in Abu Dhabi, you've got, you know, bottom three teams are like Williams, Sauber and Haas, probably, in all likelihood. You know, in Abu Dhabi you have like this massive tooth and nail battle over 15th place, because that point might decide who finished in the bottom three positions. Like, that's more exciting than those positions being decided kind of midway through the season because one of them happened to nick a 8th place or something. But
here's my issue. I actually do, there is a genuine issue to raise here with the scoring of points. Everyone's thinking about the bottom five teams, right? And no one's given any thought to how this can affect like a world championship run for a front runner. When it's already as easy as it is for Max Verstappen or the lead car, whoever the lead car happens to be, if they've got an advantage, it's already that easy for them to just run away with a championship. Then it takes away the possibility that they might finish outside of the points because they have some kind of issue. If they're on a big championship run, and if we want close Formula One, if we want those runs at the front of the field to be really, really hard fought and close, then retirements and issues have to cost a lot. There has to be the potential for you to not score points, to imperil your world championship. And doing this takes all of that peril away. It means that they're going to be adding to their points tally every single race.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, pointless finishers can make or break championships and can really, really bring the competition. If you just look at like the start of this season, Max Verstappen didn't finish the race, didn't score points. And I know they're not saying like, if you still obviously have to finish the race to score points.
Yeah.
But giving people extra opportunities to score points when they're already probably going to score points all the way through the season anyway, I think can only have a negative effect on the competition at the front of the field.
That is a good point. That is a very good point. I hadn't really thought of it that.
I don't think anyone has. I've not read anything where anyone posits that. I've not read a single comment anywhere that posits that theory. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's why.
You because Zach Brown suggested that some people are even saying points all the way down was the way to go, and that part of the reason they defer this decision is that they want to have, which, to be fair, this part of it I do agree with, is that they want to properly spend time looking at all the options, and if they are going to make a change, just make a change once and have that be the point system, not faff around and keep changing it like, oh, I don't know, the sprint format. So there's that at least.
I have to say I was surprised and relieved when they said they were going to defer the decision, because it all came about really, really fast.
Yeah.
It all feels like a bit of a knee-jerk reaction because we're divided up with five and five, and I just think it's so premature to be talking about changing the point system one season that we've got a bit of a gap between the top five and the bottom five. It's like, whoa, hold on. Like,
yeah, let's spend a bit of time.
You know, we're five races into this season. Let's think about this before we go changing the whole points tally system. Like, come on. Like, get real. It's all a bit... It's just crazy to me.
Yeah.
you'd change the entire scoring system of a sport just because one season has a very, very specific situation.
Five races, in fact.
Five races of a season. Five races into a season, you've got what people believe to be quite a very specific sitch. And like you will get halfway into the season and this problem solves itself because everyone's, you know, gaps have closed, everyone's upgraded their cars and you know, things will change. And that will happen. Like,
I mean, I don't believe for a second that like Alpine are gonna stay where they are. They're gonna move up throughout the season. I think it's gonna ebb and flow. I definitely think this season is gonna ebb and flow. Like McLaren shown how one good upgrade package could really make a big difference given how close the field is right now. So there's no way it's gonna stay like this for the whole season.
At the start of this sort of when this first came about, I think at that point RB hadn't really scored any or many points, and since then they've had a few points scored. So
yeah, they're snapping at the heels of the quote unquote top five. Well, they have been the top five in some races. Yeah. So
exactly. Yeah. So I think this whole thing is a non-issue. I think it makes no sense to me to mess around with the point scoring system. I think leave it as it is. There's nothing. Focus on the real problems that we've got in Formula One, not the point system, especially when there are already established ways of establishing the order of the championship at the end of the season. It's inconsequential, this.
It's the same as when we're having all these discussions about the sprint format. It's like, is that really what we're going to be spending our time having big discussions about, like, of all the other things you could be trying to fix?
Exactly. Oh, well. Anyway.
Let's have a quick dip into the driver market kind of rumours of the week, because that's always, I mean, the entire season is silly season this year. even though Hülkenberg is leaving Haas at the end of this season, it's most people seem to be of the opinion now that that's not helped Magnussen's case, basically, that he still is at the moment looking at being on the way out. The latest rumour is that the team are... So Oli Bearman, we're fully expecting to get one of those seats. He's very highly rated at Haas after the practice sessions he's done with them. I mean, he's probably going to drive the Grom. Yeah, it's not this weekend, but it's... Isn't it? Oh, it might be, actually.
I think it is, Imola.
It's very soon, anyway. Actually, no, it won't be this weekend because he's racing F2 this weekend, so they'll probably make it a...
No, they might.
I guess if he's there, they probably
if
will.
If he's there, yeah. No reason not to.
But the newer rumours is that Haas are potentially assessing Zhou and Sargeant as the potentials for the second seat, which feels to me like everything they learned by getting rid of Schumacher and
Mazepin
and getting in some experienced drivers, they've now just forgotten that and will get in a rookie and someone who's only done a season or two. So don't know about that.
I think the problems they're trying to solve by getting rid of Magnussen aren't going to be solved by either of those two drivers joining the team.
Unless
money's the issue and they want money.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? And ultimately, that's kind of why Gene Haas is doing this, so it wouldn't surprise me. Bottas has also been talked about as an option. I think that'd make a lot more sense for them. Very experienced driver alongside a rookie sounds like a much better combination.
Yeah,
for them.
Yeah. Bottas is a better. I would much prefer to see Bottas there.
Yeah. I think we're everyone's pretty convinced that Bottas is out at Sauber end of this year. Speaking of Teo Pourchaire, who was fully expected to get a Sauber seat for this year, and apparently was promised a Sauber seat for next year as well. Looking increasingly like he's not going to get that. Sainz is still sort of the top name being discussed at Sauber/Audi. Pourchaire, meanwhile, is now doing the whole rest of this IndyCar season for McLaren because they have completely dropped Malukas, who was injured. Yeah. There's a whole other story there that we won't get into. But he's doing every race except the Indy 500 for them. So it'll be cool to see what he manages to do there.
I mean, I think to be fair, we talked about that briefly the other week. I think someone sent some inbox about Theo. I think, but
yeah, I remember
saying like everything that he's saying at the minute would indicate that he's more interested in taking the opportunity that is actually there for him in IndyCar than sitting around and just kind of hoping that someone offers him a seat in Formula One. Yeah. And you know, I can't blame the guy,
especially when Audi just don't seem interested in him at all.
Yeah, there's, if you know, if I get the allure of F1 and I get the, you know, the whole thing of like, you know, if people have got feel like they've got a potential at a shot in F1, they sort of hang around in order to try and get it. But I think also a lot of drivers, especially drivers that have kind of fallen victim to the youth systems and not ending up in an F1 seat as a product of the youth systems, have kind of looked at some drivers' experience, like maybe such as Nyck de Vries, like kind of being part of the youth programs and then ending up going to Formula E and actually having some success there, and then eventually getting his time in F1 and it not really working out. I think maybe a lot of these younger drivers are sort of thinking, well, if these established teams can give me a position somewhere else, like WEC, Formula E, IndyCar, why not go there and actually just make a name for myself and a career for myself in that sport, in that series instead?
Well, you look at someone like Felipe Drugovich, who's like, you know, won an F2 title, he's in with an F1 team, and he's playing that, oh, I'm this close, I'm going to stick around card.
Yeah.
He's turned down Formula E and I think IndyCar drives to stay close to Formula One. And then this year, I think he's doing a bit of European Le Mans series in LMP2. And like, that's it. That's his racing for the year. Like, you got to know when to cut your losses, I think.
Yeah. And I think there's an element of that for Theo in the sense of just going, definitely, you know what, there's a good opportunity for me in IndyCar. I'm going to go grab it with both hands and take advantage of it.
Rather than, you know what, just hoping. Like, if you don't get that Formula One seat, there's still a lot of, you know, there's still a lot of people who bite your hand off to be a professional driver, eh? Like, yeah. They're still always going to be professional drivers for different teams and whatnot, and have different careers inside motor racing.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, when you've got links with teams like McLaren, obviously, you know, Zak Brown's made it a bit of a mission for McLaren to kind of become, like, multi-sport.
Multi-league, I guess.
You want to call it. Like, you know, they've been similar positions in the past, like in the early days of like Bruce McLaren's original era, but Zak Brown's got a very definite goal of kind of making McLaren like a global motorsport brand again that's known across all these different worldwide series. And to be fair, he's doing a very good job of that. And I think that's the kind of team that I think if you are going to hang around and try and be part of, is a team like McLaren or someone like that, where you've got this opportunity to go to IndyCar, be successful with them, and then ties that might hopefully one day lead back to F1, but at least you're in with a team like this and you've got good, strong opportunities in something like IndyCar.
Yeah, I mean, the dream for, I think, a lot of Formula One teams nowadays, especially now the cost cap has sort of brought costs of running in Formula One down, and they're hoping that the new car formula in 2026 will bring costs down even further by being, you know, making the cars that bit simpler power unit wise. McLaren doing a hypercar?
For not to my knowledge.
I don't believe so.
Wouldn't it be great? So, like, basically, what I'm saying is the dream for a lot of teams is to, or the dream for me for the teams would be to have, like, say, you know, a super team like McLaren who do IndyCar, who might do, you know, World Rally Championship. They might do all of the different kinds of circuit racing as well as Formula One. And then you've got, like, suddenly you've got this, like, pool of different places where you can put your junior drivers to put them through the paces in different places and there's a bit more, there's a few more options for you with your driver, with your young driver program before they get to Formula One, where you can really let them, you know, develop and build their racecraft. And then you don't find yourself in a situation like Red Bull, where, you know, a few years ago, they just didn't have enough junior drivers. They can't, and that's how they ended up with Perez. So
the irony is, though, when you think about it, Red Bull do sponsor pretty much every motorsport.
But they don't have a team in every sport.
Yeah, though. So I think the big difference for Red Bull is, other than Formula One, Red Bull essentially sponsor athletes specifically.
Yeah.
They don't sponsor teams or run teams, because that's not essentially what they want to do. They want to have their name plastered on the side of a car, a bike,
one action pack,
on a helmet. Yeah. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, I mean, you only have to look at all the, like, kind of extreme sports people that are sponsored by Red Bull in some degree. All they're interested in is that brand being associated with these extraordinary people that do extraordinary things. Doesn't matter what their discipline is, what their sport is. And I think that's probably the biggest problem for Red Bull, is that they're more interested in just sponsoring an individual, but it's up to them to like either be an independent sports person, like, you know, some of your extreme sports people, or kind of find their own team. Like, I mean, there's, I haven't followed the supercars in Australia for the last year or two, but there was, I can't remember what team SVG used to drive for, but like they were Red Bull sponsored because by proxy, Red Bull was sponsoring SVG, and he was then obviously in the Holden or whatever he was in at the time, and that was then by proxy plastered in Red Bull branding. So, but again, that wasn't them running a team, that was just them going, right, we like this athlete, they've got our sponsorship.
So it's a weird setup
in that regard.
But I mean, going back to the original point, like McLaren now, McLaren have won a Formula One, Formula E and IndyCar race this year now. Like, that's cool to have these kind of like dynasties in motorsport, like doing it all.
So cool. It's exactly what it is. Cool is the word. It is damn cool.
It feels like something from the like the story modes on the old grid games, where you'd be like racing against the same teams in all
Raven West Motorsport.
That's grid, isn't it?
Anyway, shall we talk about Formula One again? Let's do some storylines, shall we?
Let's.
Do you want me to take us through some storylines? I'll do it. So the first one, Ferrari, they got a big upgrade package coming this weekend. It says new inlets, new side pods. New inlets on side pods. Floor update, mirror supports, cockpit wings, engine cover over bodywork. So not quite as substantial as the McLaren one, but still it is that does sound like a hefty update. So it'll be interesting to see what that brings to the table for both of the Ferraris.
They needed to be as substantial as the McLaren one was in terms of lap time, I think, because they were very much third fastest in Miami.
I would argue that the McLaren was the fastest car for the whole weekend. It just didn't
look like it.
Certainly the Norris McLaren was, anyway. And let's not forget, McLaren will bring all those upgrades to Piastri, so it's going to be double trouble for Ferrari at Imola. next one, was Miami a blip for Red Bull? Will we see them back to their usual dominance, or is the gap really closing? They only bring in a minor update. So that should look a little bit of untapped potential in the car. We've heard Red Bull say this before, we're bringing a minor update, and then they show up with like a completely different car. So, you know, the jury's out on that one. But
They say a minor update.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Red Bull have... I really do believe Red Bull have reeled them in somewhat. And I think over... A lot of sort of McLaren's issue were around tyre wear, and like we've already said, both McLaren and Ferrari have seemed to have gone a long way to fixing a lot of their tyre wear issues and brought them more on a par with Red Bull. So, I mean, wouldn't it be nice if the Ferrari upgrades work and both McLarens have got a fully upgraded and Red Bull maybe have another little bit of a, not a wobble, but, you know, they reel them in enough that there's a competition between
Imagine if the Ferrari upgrades work and we have three teams winning three races. When's the last time that happened? It's been a while.
That would be amazing. I mean, that'd be, that would be a nice injection of life for this season.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? The next one, circuit updates, runoffs. We were talking about this, weren't we? They replaced a lot of the, gravel traps with runoff areas.
No, other way around.
Other way around. Yes. Sorry, runoff areas with gravel. Yes, runoff runoff areas with. It's been a long weekend. Runoff areas with gravel traps. So yeah, the places, the part of the, one of them is, I think we should just call it Leclerc Corner, the Leclerc chicane.
Leclerc chicane, yeah, most significantly.
Leclerc chicane. So yeah, it'd be in a lot of trouble if he makes any similar sort of mistakes around there again, as he did, I think it was last time, because we skipped this race last year due to the flooding.
Yes, so it was last time there. It's Aquamirale as well, that 11, 12, 13 complex. Fast old section, and so then that's going to be unforgiving.
Is there some changes at the hairpin, not the hairpin, sorry, the chicane after Aquamirale as well?
Yeah, that's the Leclerc one.
That's Leclerc's chicane.
Then what's the last change? Is it
Pirotella, which is
eight, nine, ten before
fastest left hander? Yeah. So there's the fiddly hairpin, and then you go up the hill, and then there's the fast left hander, and that's all gravel on the outside as well.
Yeah.
And that's a really easy corner to run wide on. So that's gonna, especially in qualifying, that's gonna take some victims, I think.
Yeah, it's good to see. I think this was already a pretty traditional circuit anyway. Walls are pretty close for large sections of it. And I think it's always positive to see gravel traps replacing runoff areas. I'm in the sort of Martin Brundle camp of if you leave the track, you should know about it.
Yeah.
They will definitely know about it with some of these changes.
My only concern is that it's going to turn qualifying into a red flag fest. Because
if it does, that's fine. They just have to. They've
buckle
got
up for a 2.5 hour qualifying session.
They've got everything in place to make qualifying fair and make it possible for everyone to set their laps. So, you know, as long as they're switched on and they call the red flags as soon as they're needed and don't hang about, then
hope they've invested in some more tractors at the points where they've put the gravel traps in as well to just fish cars out as quickly as possible.
I tell you what, it'd be just like a Formula One circuit to have not done that, and just to not have tractors there. But anyway, final storyline for this one, this week is: will Magnussen pick up any more penalty points? Can he get like another four? Is it before he's
two? It's basically one incident is going to be enough for him to get a race back.
Oh wow! So Behrman might be in that car sooner than he thinks.
much sooner.
And that is all the storylines for this week. So maybe it's time for us to take all that on board and make some predictions.
Yeah,
is the word I'm looking for.
So we'll go through ours first, and then I'll run through how the lovely listeners at home can get involved if they want to. So fastest in Q3. Does anyone have faith in McLaren updates or anyone else's updates to say that it's not Max Verstappen?
I was going to ask about Ferrari updates.
I think it just got harder after that last race. I think this call just got that bit harder, but I still think Verstappen has just got the edge, so I'm going to go Verstappen for fastest in Q3. But I don't necessarily think he's going to win.
This was already a tough one. I think it has got harder. I think Norris might nick this one.
Okay.
He's had a bad weekend in Miami for qualifying, but generally he's been really on the pace in qualifying, so I think he might nick this one.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to go with Verstappen. I'm going to stick with that, same as Stu has. But for the win, I'm going to go with Carlos Sainz.
Ooh.
I don't hate it.
Do you agree with it, though?
I'm not going to agree with it. That'd be silly. I think Piastri might be with a little shout.
Oh, I'd love that.
Is that what you're
I've said it. I've said Piastri. Why not? It's going to be a Verstappen, but I've said Piastri now.
I think the Red Bull race pace is going to be back to its... not as dominant as you've seen in the past, but I think it's going to be a bit too much for the rest, so I'm going to say Verstappen for the win.
Okay. So we still think that they're very, very good for points and positions. It's just a case of we think other people might be mixing it up with them now. Okay, what about first DNF? Any takers there for an early one there?
We don't have any Italian drivers to pick.
No.
We do have
Italian-based teams.
Yeah, have two Italian teams. I'm going to go for a Sonoda.
Okay.
I was going to go an RB too.
Yeah,
you're gonna go for the other one, or are you? Just
no, I don't have the heart to say Ricciardo. the other Italian team. Yeah, Leclerc. Why not? Be funny, wouldn't it?
Oh, Leclerc. Okay, I'm gonna go with Kevin Magnussen just because the way he's driving at the minute, I just can't see him not having an incident. If I'm totally honest with you.
Especially if Hülkenberg finds himself in 10th place. Magnussen's just going to turn into a menace again.
Yeah. Well, I hope not. I don't like us. We could do a whole episode on that. That's an ugly situation that's starting to unfold there.
Especially a track like this as well.
Yeah. I guess you covered that last week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, to some degree, yeah.
So if you're listening now and you haven't listened to last week's, you want to hear all about that, go back and have a listen after this.
Hear our thoughts on.
Yeah, finish this one first. Jeez, come on. Right, what about number of finishes? I'll throw you one out there and say 17. That's for me.
I think that's ambitious given a tight track and lots of new gravel traps. I want to go as low as 15, I think.
Oh. Split the difference, Stu?
Well, I'm either going to go 18 or 16. Yeah, I think 16 is more likely than 18, but I think 17 is the best one. But I don't want to guess the same as you.
16.5, if only that was possible. 16 and a half car finish.
Yeah.
You're going for 16?
Yeah.
Okay. And our random driver for this week is the one and only Lance Stroll. How's that one going to pan out, fellas?
I'm going to go... Based on his recent results.
Where's he been finishing recently?
His record this season is 10th, retired 6th, 12th, 15th, 17th.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's not brilliant.
13th.
Okay, that seems...
Yeah, that feels...
Fairly reasonable. Anything from you, Chris?
I'll go for another 12th.
Another 12th. I'm going to go... Just so it's around the same point, I'm going to go 14th. Okay, and that is us done. If you want to get involved with predictions, head to backofthegrid.com where there's all the information there for you to sign up and get involved. And it's always worth doing because if you get all five of these right on a race weekend, you do win a little prize. So be sure to join in. Even if you've not played before, it's well worth doing. There's also some information there on the fantasy leagues that we run, so you can join the official F1 Fantasy League and also our Grid Rival Fantasy League. With that being said, though, let's do a quick bit of inbox to see us out.
Is keep me saying now.
Stay out.
Box.
Hey man.
Do you want to take it, Chris?
Yeah, just one this week from Benson, who says, "Hey man, with the rumours circulating that Logan Sargeant could be replaced as early as this weekend at Imola by Kimi Antonelli, do you think he will see out the season? And if not, how many more races do you think he'll be given?"
Ooh, well, that all depends on whether or not Kimi Antonelli is allowed to have a super license, isn't it?
And because it he's not old enough now for like a super the license. Yet. Is no.
Yeah. And when does he turn 18?
Just before Monza.
So that's so when I think he will be replaced.
Yeah, I was going to say he wouldn't be able to race before then, regardless of if he got a super license accepted or not. I don't think he would be able to get a super license accepted if he's not 18, would he?
Well, that's the whole argument. That's the whole sort of thing they're trying to get to happen.
Mercedes he's got enough points. He's trying to get a way around it.
He's got the points. He's just not old enough.
We put a rule in place for a reason. Like, come on.
The Max Verstappen rule, isn't it? One of the many Max Verstappen rules that have been implemented over the years.
I personally don't think it would be to anyone's benefit to swap Antonelli into that car this season, to be honest. Like, I think if we get as far as... If he gets deep into the season as Monza, which is pretty late, I don't think swapping the second Williams driver is... Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe Williams will get into a really close fight, but I can't see that swap making a huge difference to Williams' fortunes. And I also think it's just going to be throwing Antonelli in sooner than is necessary and putting unnecessary pressure on him. Like, I feel like Toto Wolff is still so annoyed that he missed out on signing Verstappen that he's now overcorrecting with Antonelli and he's just like going to push him too far too soon. And I just let the kid do a year of Formula 2. Like, you've already skipped Formula 3.
Yeah, let him
have a year
of
Formula 2 before you put him on an F1 grid.
Exactly. Let him finish his season.
Last time they did that, though, they lost him. It was Verstappen they were after. But
they're not going to this time. Like, they've got him. Like,
yeah.
Have they got him? Is he under contract?
I think they've like got him under contract. I think if they didn't put him on the grid next year, then maybe there might be a way out for it.
He's been under Mercedes junior contract since
good few
I don't
years
even know when
long time
like, doing like almost karting, I think, like not that far away from his karting days.
That Hamilton style, isn't it? Like from really early days. But I don't know if I agree with you, Chris. I feel like the Williams, there's not really going to be an awful lot of pressure on him if he does go into the Williams, because like you know, it happens a lot, this kind of thing. You get a young driver, you put them in one of the backmarker teams just for them to get an understanding of Formula One, to get used to the controls, you know, like get used to like where all the buttons are, because there are a lot more controls in Formula One than there are in you know, some of the other series, especially, you know, even F2, there's way more sort of parameters to understand in a car. And again, if you can get your driver into a position, like, you know, same as the point I was making earlier, if you can get anyone in your team into a position where they're able to sort of understand Formula One or prepare for next season, and there's nothing to stop them doing that with Antonelli, then why not? I think it puts him in a better place so that when he does go in the Mercedes, he's got some experience. Because you talked about pressure, and the pressure would be much higher if he was straight into a Mercedes than it would be if he was in the
But you also put him straight into a Mercedes after F2?
I think they'd have to. I don't know.
Caused themselves a situation. Not caused themselves a situation. The Hamilton situation has caused a problem where they've got a seat to fill next year, haven't they? That's the problem.
Like Behrman, where you can just give him a string of FP1s and stuff to, so he is like, he's had the seat time, he's prepared for it. Antonelli can't even do an FP1 until Monza, so
That's true.
That, you know, it just feels like pushing it too soon, a bit unnecessarily.
But they have given him loads of seat time in Formula One car, though. He's doing an amazing job.
Private tests,
He's getting loads of private tests up at where was it? Austria, I think he was driving around and doing really good as well. Like he's like a tenth off, like some of the best times ever done in that car.
You got to remember, even Verstappen did some test drives before he got let loose, like on a season.
Yeah,
so I think you need that at least at minimum to bed in. But I mean,
we've got to see how he does this weekend.
Exactly.
F2 anyway, you know.
He's done what? Two rounds, three rounds of Formula 2.
Yeah.
But I mean, his best finish is a fourth already. In F2, I mean, that is a good. He's already got for a rookie. That's a decent result this early in the season to already have a fourth. They've only done
And when you've skipped three Formula events, 3 events, and you've come straight from regional Formula 4 and stuff like that.
I don't think you can say, oh, fourth is really good because he's only a rookie, and then in the next breath say, let's get him in an F1 car as quick as you can. Like,
They're already doing that, though. They've got him in a Formula 1 car, bombing around Austria.
Is he that good or isn't he? You know,
better than any of us. They must feel confident in him if they feel like they can put him in a position where they can request sort of special dispensation for his age for the super license plan.
But at the
end of the day, they're definitely not going to get that dispensation. It would be nice if they could at least get him into a practice session. I think like the fact that he can't even do a practice session because he's not old enough is ridiculous, to be honest.
I think because I don't want the minimum ages for F2, I'm guessing it's 16
or 17. Yeah, I think it's
16. I would argue if you're old enough to be on the F2 grid, then you should be eligible for a free practice license. I think
I think super license and free practice license maybe don't need the same 18-year-old categorization. Like you say, if you're capable to be competitive in F2, you should at least be eligible for like a free practice license for being able to do sessions in free practice.
If such a thing existed,
I mean, do I not remember a thing where we had something similar to this and the younger drivers had different coloured, like, thingy lights on the back of the
T-bars. Cars? Oh, like, yeah, they did, actually,
yeah,
didn't
I
they?
Yeah, I think they did, didn't they?
We trialed something ages ago, I'm sure we did. Yeah, and the guys who didn't have the full super license because they were still juniors had like green, like a little bit like there's a similar thing in IndyCar, isn't there, where they put something at the back wing of the car so that you know you're coming up behind it.
Like a big L plate.
It is basically, it is essentially an L plate, but I feel like we did that. Like, why not have something like that where you can get this free practice license between 16 and 18 to have the opportunity to prove your worth in the car, essentially, and prove that you are capable of being in that car. But there's something that's like, whilst you're in those free practice sessions, there's something that's just like an identifier of, you know, this is a junior rookie, essentially.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, if you're good enough to be in the free practice session, you shouldn't even need that, to be honest. I feel like
no, but I mean,
think that was a special case because they had so many many of them at once. But like, I really don't think you need anything. If you're good enough to be in the practice session, then you ought to be good enough to be racing.
I mean, I genuinely can't remember why we did it in the first place. The time
I'm talking about. I do remember it happening, but I don't remember exact reason why it was.
It's a Google.
I've got a feeling it was one
podcast.
Of the mid-season tire tests in Hungary. For some reason, that's sticking. Anyway.
Anyway, we're getting into the weeds. I'm going to end it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget you can submit your predictions for this week's Italian Grand Prix. Emilia Romagna Grand Prix.
I mean, do you want to go by its proper name?
No, please no. Don't do this.
Come on.
Have you got it in front of you?
So this year's is the Formula One MSC Cruisers Gran Primero del Made in Italy E del Emilia Romagna 2024 Grand Prix.
Michael Schumacher Cruises getting in there this week.
Michael Schumacher Cruisers, yeah.
So mental, isn't it? What a weird name. What a weird name.
I feel like at this point it's just become that much of like a meta meme within Formula One that it's like they have to make it that long.
Yeah, are they almost like doing it, seeing how long they can make it? Yeah. Like, so people take the mick out of it and make it into a thing. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, you know. Probably the social media team of just giving given way too much power at that place. Right. That's it for this week. So yeah, don't forget you can go to backersgrid.com to submit your predictions. You can find us on all the usual places, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere. Don't forget to leave us a comment and bung us a subscribe if you like what you are seeing and hearing and you're on YouTube. And that will do us for this week. So it's goodbye from me and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.